You probably clicked this video because you value your privacy. Or maybe you're just really, really nosy. Or maybe both, and you're just a walking contradiction. Either way, you definitely came to the right place.
Today I'm going to be telling you and showing you just about everything that I know about spy microphones and acoustic surveillance, which happens to be a lot.
We're going to be creating invisible laser microphones. We're going to be turning regular microphones into beam-forming eavesdrop devices. We're going to be taking video footage of garbage on the floor through a zoom lens attached to an insane high-speed camera, and then later reconstructing the sound in the room from the subtle vibrations in Excel. Yes, Microsoft Excel. And we're even going to try bouncing millions of photons around the room every second and measuring how long they take to return to the sensor so we could measure the vibration of particular objects. So congratulations to you. You have reached a stairwell down to the deepest levels of acoustic absurdity. Welcome. Before we get started, I want to show you something that demonstrates how vulnerable we are to audio attacks. For example, I like mechanical keyboards, but each key has its own slightly unique sound. And hypothetically, somebody could break into my studio when I'm not here and record each and every key and then use AI to decrypt and transcribe everything that I'm typing. Well, this isn't hypothetical. This is actually something that exists right now, and it totally works. Okay, but what if somebody using one of the techniques that you're about to see in this video just recorded you typing without training a model of any sort? Or what if you were typing while video conferencing? I have bad news for you. There's an algorithm called KeyTap that attempts to take recorded keystrokes, compare them to a dataset of English words, and decrypt what you're typing by making guesses that get more confident over time. I decided to put an entry-level shotgun mic on one of my cameras and put that outside my window in the woods and see if any of this was even possible. After doing a little bit of noise isolation and correcting some errors in the auto detection, KeyTap got to work. It was really slow, but running it locally helped speed things up quite a bit. At first, it was guessing a lot of nonsense and seemingly unable to sort out particular words that were important to the meaning of the sentence, but sure enough, eventually, it more or less figured out what I had been typing. So yeah, maybe it's time I look for a quieter keyboard. All right, let's start our descent into spy microphones. When most people think about wiretapping or audio surveillance, they just think of a bug or a transmitter or recording device that you could put in the same room as the person that you want to spy on. And I'm sure this is not news to anybody watching this, but you could get one of these devices for like $20 on Amazon. A lot of people don't know about this, but Apple even has this live listen feature where you could just hide your phone somewhere, put in your AirPods, and then listen to what's happening in the room with your phone live. While doing that certainly constitutes spying, the microphones themselves are not made for that. The most basic level of spy microphone, to me anyway, would be one with directional polar patterns, which I'm using right now to spy on my mouth and not whatever noise is happening over here or back there. You know what? Let's do a brief test of some different types of directional microphones to see how they perform at a distance. Come on. So I'm standing directly in front of the camera about 100 feet away, and I suppose the first thing we'll try is a digital Sony shotgun mic, and it doesn't even require you to plug it into the side of the camera. It just goes on the hot shoe on top for anybody who's photography or videography, you know what that means. Next up is the Rode NT something something. Here it is. It costs about $1,000 and it's what I would consider a professional grade shotgun mic. Although it's not really built for 100 foot distances, it does seem to isolate noise very well at mid-range distances. For example, when I'm in my studio here recording a video and the air conditioner kicks on. And now you're hearing me through my custom parabolic microphone, which is considered to be a step up from shotgun microphones. This isn't the most directional parabolic I've ever heard because it's mostly designed to record things at really, really high frequencies so I could slow them down and listen to things like birds and bats. Some of the more modern ones, like this Sony, actually have little microphones on the back that invert the phase of the audio that's coming in from behind and then apply it to the audio in front, which actually cancels it out. That's what you're hearing right now, by the way. There's no post-production put on this at all. As long as you have more than one microphone, there are some tricks that you could try and hone in on a specific sound. For example, this is just an XY stereo pair, so the wave file it creates will have two different files. If we take both of those files, make two different mono files, then invert the phase of the audio from the microphone that's pointed away from me, and then copy and paste it over the waveform of the microphone that is pointed at me, we should have some decent noise reduction. The word beamforming sounds incredibly sci-fi and cool, but the technology is being used one way or another everywhere from webcams to mobile phones. It's essentially a different application of the techniques used in noise-canceling headphones. With noise-canceling, the sound of your surroundings are being phase-inverted and then played back into your ears. This is more or less what a mid-side microphone does, but they're typically engineered to focus on clarity of an instrument or vocal recording rather than the extended range for spying. Mid-side microphones typically work by creating polar patterns that look like boobies, butts, farts coming out of butts, and of course, balls. But other than a wide selection of pornographic illustrations, mid-side microphones look at audio phase as negative and positive. And by recording both of those, it allows you to do a bit more in post-production, like widening or limiting the stereo field. Now, when you add another microphone or plane to this equation, we get to see the balls in the third dimension, but that also opens up the world of spherical harmonics. These microphones typically have a tetrahedral design. Moving up to second-order ambisonics gives us a much finer resolution, and those microphones typically have an octahedral design, or I guess technically it would be an octahedron, I have no idea. As one might guess, the math involved in using pressure and frequencies to manipulate sound in the form of three-dimensional blobs is a bit outside the scope of this video. But higher-order ambisonic techniques work insanely well at beamforming, especially if you're recording at a high-resolution bitrate that allows you to digitally amplify nearly silent sounds. Like most red-blooded Americans, I have a tiny speaker quietly playing Franklin D. Roosevelt's wartime speeches played on a concrete lamb in my yard. If you were to sit here, right in the middle, even when the chickens and the wind are quiet and not making any noise, you cannot hear it. But when we use higher-order ambisonics to amplify negative pressure everywhere, except for this one spherical harmonic blob, we can hear it rather well. Just out of curiosity, I want to see what Adobe's voice isolation model does.
A day, grateful British. It is a small sad effect, but money must surely raid the end in the future.
Now, before you run out and drop a couple grand on an ambisonic microphone, we should talk about some of the cons. In order to use ambisonics properly, outside of just converting what you capture to a game engine or something for surround sound, you do have to learn a little bit of math and a little bit of physics, as the whole concept is based on Laplace's equation. And honestly, that sounds a lot more gatekeepy and intimidating than it actually is. So if this is something you're fascinated with, dive right in. In 2017, a much younger-looking and sprightly version of myself made a video where I built a laser microphone that could hear what was happening in a room by reflecting a laser beam off of a window into a photodiode. I even attempted to decrease the overall power of the laser and mess with the phase a bit so it would only send a signal over a high threshold so it would be less visible to the human eye, and therefore a better spy microphone. Well, I'm back. Making a laser audio communicator or microphone is actually a very accessible project, and the laser microphone starter pack looks a bit like this or this. But instead of doing that stuff, I wanted to try something that I had only heard about in spy lore and KGB and CIA conspiracy theories, but never found a demonstration of or any evidence that it was actually done. Something that is actually a little bit dangerous. I actually had to be very careful with this one. Even though I had some unique tools to help me guide the laser, a mistake could injure myself or others. This might sound dramatic, but keep in mind that infrared lasers are not only invisible to the human eye, but their focused radiation can burn skin and damage DNA a lot more than other visible wavelengths. TLDR, do not fuck with infrared lasers unless you're a professional. At the very minimum, with this invisible light, I needed to be able to see what I was doing when focusing the beam. And fortunately, some 15 years ago, I took apart my DSLR, removed the filter that removed infrared light, as it's generally just disruptive in normal photography, and I replaced it with a narrowband filter that removes all visible light instead. Now it's a fancy pants infrared camera that makes just about everything look really creepy and surreal. Using live preview, I was able to capture the beam while also blowing non-nicotine vape at it, which also tastes like funnel cake, so that was an added bonus. I won't go too in the weeds, but after a lot of trial and error, I found the right combination of resistance, voltage regulators, amplifiers, and photodiodes to get audio to work from A to B. I also installed a filter to dampen the visible light spectrum on the receiving end. Due to there being less infrared light than other wavelengths, this actually improved the quality over my prior experiments. Weirdly, the pulse width resolution was much clearer than my standard red or green lasers, which I assume is due to the visible ambient light interference. So let's wait until the middle of the night, lock up the pets, carefully set this up, and test my infrared beam bouncing off of my studio window. Just like I did in the video 8 years ago, I put on Night of the Living Dead, because it's a public domain film and won't result in the copyright SWAT team knocking down my door. I played the movie at normal TV watch and volume, and then spent an absurdly long time trying to use a combination of my infrared modified camera and a fog machine to line up the beams. Throwing sticks at the window sounds so cool. I'd call this experiment a success. Also a huge, expensive, dangerous pain in the ass. None of this went to waste, though. I now have a ton of new laser components to play with, which I have accidentally discovered makes incredible sounding digital threshold distortion. And in the end of that laser microphone video I made 8 years ago, I had a wild idea that seemed like a high-tech fantasy.
Another concept that I'd love to try, but can't afford, is using a very high-speed camera to simply take video of a laser beam on a surface such as a wall. It simply allows decoding of the vibrations in post by isolating the green dot. Someday.
Well, young Ben, I've made it, and it's time to live that fantasy, and we don't even need a laser at all. When we listen to something like this, a simple synthesizer tone, we tend to take what's really going on for granted. In physics, when you look at this phenomenon through a mathematical lens, you're not thinking about tones, but oscillations or periodic functions of compressions and rarefactions in the air that are playing so fast that our brains can't register the speed of what's happening. But when you slow things down a whole lot, those details with the periodic functions can become visible to us. When you treat this video that has 1,440 frames per second like a 1,440 hertz audio file, you can count 512 vibration cycles for every second. And that resonance, sped up to real time, sounds to us. Want the most painfully accurate way to tune a guitar? This low E is 82.41 hertz. For every 10 times the E string oscillates, an A string will oscillate about 13 times, or 110 times per second, and so on. We can observe the tuning fork doing something particularly interesting at this speed. It's vibrating in different places, slow and fast. These vibrations affect one another and complement each other's continuity. And that's why a tuning fork, or a bell, or most metallic objects have resonating overtones when we hear them. Let's zoom into this speaker hooked up to a tone generator. Here's a sine wave, or a square wave, or a saw wave. The smoothness or harshness of the sounds are directly correlated with the motion. But what if we meticulously tracked these vibrations and plotted them in a time series relative to the frames on the high-speed camera? By manipulating this fourth temporal dimension, can we hear sound with our eyes? We gotta try. The first thing I had to do was make a test file to calibrate these two different mediums. A low C for 100 milliseconds, C1 for 100 milliseconds, C2 for 100 milliseconds, and so on. This shouldn't even matter above 800 hertz due to the Nyquist sampling theorem, which, in a nutshell, tells us that audio can only be accurately portrayed at half the total frequency of its sampling rate. And of course, since we're making the ultimate spy microphone here, we need to see if we can make out words from these vibrations.
If this works, you should be terrified.
There are some videos here on YouTube about a group of MIT scientists who came up with a clever way of doing this by extracting tones from a bag of potato chips. I had an idea that would possibly be more accurate and, for me and you at least, kind of fun. Okay, so to see if this is even possible, we need to record a speaker cone's vibrations at 1,440 frames per second, and then we need to extract precise data from those vibrations. Fortunately, there's an amazing open source tool that has the capabilities of doing this that I had had installed and completely forgot about.
This is called Tracker, and it generally has nothing to do with music, except in this case, it does. Generally, if you're tracking something on here, like a double pendulum or something, you want to put a sticker on the tracking point because that just makes it easier. I guess this little speck will be the thing that we track throughout this. We're only going to be tracking one plane, but we still should set a coordinate axis. This is going to arguably be the toughest part of the whole thing. We had to get a little in the weeds here to get this between negative one and positive one. Like the most math I've ever done in Excel, I think. All right, here is our text file. 32-bit float, 1440 hertz. All right, the moment of truth.
Not only was that a success, it was actually way easier to set up than I anticipated, but now it's time to try the same thing on an empty grocery store bag a few feet away from the speaker playing sound at a medium volume. Initially, not so great, but after some time and trial and error on that footage, I was eventually able to make out the speech by using some noise filtering and tweaks with the data. But I really wanted to know if the limitation here was the frequency range leaving out vibrations in the bag itself, or if it was from my capture methods. 1440 frames per second in HD video is kind of just insane. 1 minute of video at that speed is an entire hour that I have to sort through in playback. But in the digital audio realm, CD quality audio is over 30 times more detailed than that. Last year, I made a video where I built a sound camera, and a whole lot of that video was exploring vibration amplification algorithms, which is a handy and totally random knowledge to have fresh in my memory and in my virtual environments folder. So I ran a bunch of tests using these algorithms to amplify the vibration of the bag footage, and while it worked nicely, it wasn't very accurate. I mean, it's accurate, but not accurate enough to be useful at an audio rate. I did try converting it out to audio just to make sure, but I just got a bunch of false noise. Some of those same MIT engineers that worked on the vibration amplification also worked on a vibration microphone technique that actually made some waves in audio science circles a few years ago. And I have the code, and even though the code required a lot of patching up to work, after about 10 hours of CPU grinding for 3 seconds of audio, the algorithm did work. It just didn't work nearly as well as the method we tried earlier. So let's check the score here. MIT, 0. High school dropout, 1. Just kidding. Just because I couldn't make it work well doesn't mean that it doesn't work well. In fact, Veritasium did a video on it a few years ago, and it seemed to work pretty impressively. Okay, so a lot more grinding and trial and error on the ever so subtly vibrating bag and napkin, and we got this. It's pretty insane to think that with enough time, money, and effort, anywhere you can be seen, you may also be able to be heard. But I have one more vibration snooping trick up my sleeve. If time-of-flight technology rings a bell for you, that's because the first big commercial introduction of it was for the Kinect sensor for the Xbox 360 in 2010, which was an insane deal on a purely technological hardware level. A time-of-flight sensor works by shooting infrared dots all over a room, and then it measures their distance and three-dimensional axes by constantly photographing them at high speeds, then dividing the response speed by the speed of light. It's absolutely mental. You may have also heard about it in reference to self-driving cars, as it provides a way that they can detect and confirm objects like other vehicles, Looney Tune backdrops, and, of course, fake children. Except for Tesla, of course.
In cars, it's friggin' stupid. It's expensive and unnecessary.
Someone should make a video about this 2 years ago. The reason I'm not using a LiDAR sensor for this is because while it's superior in range, the sensors aren't designed for focusing on one dot. Most LiDAR sensors are a laser version of this thing that spins around at high speeds like a radar and measures time of flight 360 degrees around the camera sensor. So the sensors themselves are just not optimized for a high frame per second of a stationary object, and I'm hoping to push the time of flight sensor above 90 frames per second. Once we finish that programming and logistical nightmare, we have all these frames of me sitting at my computer desk listening to music, which translates to millions of points per frame and over a billion points total. Absurdly enough, if I had a bunch of supercomputers handy, I would be able to just open up these point cloud frames in Excel and look at these precise 3D data points for the entire room, 90 times per second. Fortunately, point cloud analysis is very much a thing within the sunlightless depths of physics and engineering, and there's software that we can use used to view, study, compare, and most importantly, execute algorithms to process this data. Okay, so let's take these frames from this scene here and only extract the motion. After like hours and hours, here you go. We can do something similar to our last segment by setting a sort of calibration stick and extracting the data of particular points. We can then plot that data over a time series and voila, we have extremely low resolution three-dimensional audio that is useful to no one. However, many point cloud cameras are designed to work well with other point cloud cameras, not only to get more complete views, but to error correct one another. And in this case, if someone had the time and money, they could stagger these 90 frame per second point cloud cameras so each one of them has an exclusive phase, and if you were to get, I don't know, 10 of those, you would have 900 frames per second, which would get you up to 450 hertz of audio. But who in the world do you know that has that much time and money and obsession and determination to do something like that? Oh, not me. If I did, I surely wouldn't spend it on dozens of expensive point cloud sensors and computers to shittily do the same thing that a $20 microphone does. But there is a really good and concerning reason why this is such a deep level on my list. Theoretically, considering that time of flight works up to 3,000 meters or 1.8 miles, with enough determination, you'd be able to do what my laser microphone does, but with the added benefit of isolating different objects for direct vibration analysis. Now, imagine what one could accomplish setting that up across the street from the White House, and it gets a whole lot more interesting, or scary, of course. Now I'm going to add in a theoretical bonus level just beneath that. I have one more idea: to engineer and create the ultimate insanely high resolution spy microphone, or more of a new and radical type of microphone in general. After a ton of tinkering and exploring in this video, I kept thinking to myself, man, I wish I worked in a big lab and had access to an interferometer. And then I started reading about how they worked, and one thing led to another, and now I am happy to announce that I am officially building an interferometer table. And if I'm successful in this endeavor, it will absolutely be a video of its own and probably the coolest thing I'll ever do on this channel. But to give you a quick rundown, a Michelson interferometer takes a beam of light, splits it into two beams, then slows down the speed of one of them before merging it back, and by looking at the physical output on a backdrop, this gives you a way to observe the alternate phase patterns and interference patterns, or superposition, of both beams. You can observe movement in picometers, which is a billionth of a millimeter, so even the most subtle vibration that no camera or algorithm can detect will be visible and clear. Elon Musk can finally measure his penis. As far as I know, this would be the world's most sensitive microphone, and it kind of transcends the novelty of spy microphones, because hearing quantum sounds for the first time is infinitely cooler than even dropping on someone. Whether you're using a standard microphone or an invisible infrared laser or $1 million vibration sensing setup, there is one thing that I should point out. In the US at least, if you're standing on a sidewalk or in a park or anywhere in public and you can see someone from public view, that does not give you the legal right to record their conversation or anything like that. If we were in a public park right now and you were standing a few feet away from me, you probably could record me because I have no reason to expect privacy in that situation. But when I get into my vehicle, I do have an expectation of privacy because an ambient level conversation cannot be heard from outside of it. And I have no reason to expect that somebody would be shooting an infrared laser at the windshield or recording high speed video of my mouth to snoop on whatever's coming out of it. In other words, using any of the techniques or technology that you saw in this video to record somebody without their consent in their home or office, etc., is almost certainly against the law. And in a lot of states, it's a felony. There is no technology that I could think of that would help you get around that little legal pickle, nor should there be. A lot of times when I make videos like this, viewers get concerned that whatever it is that I'm showing you will then be used by law enforcement or tyrannical governments. The reason I'm not concerned about this, and the reason why you shouldn't really be concerned about this, is pretty simple and has very little to do with ethics or personal beliefs. To give you an example, freelance forensic science work for the FBI pays about $40 an hour, and that's about the same across other high-level government agencies. In fact, I did do some acoustic-related research work for Homeland Security some years ago, don't worry, nothing nefarious or even that interesting, and my pay per day was less than what Yamaha was paying me to make presets for a synthesizer. But if you'll allow me to realign your worries a little bit, you could worry about the police cherry-picking the information that they present to a judge to obtain a warrant to put a much more affordable bug in your house or wiretap your phone, because that is something that happens.
Now,
a word from my sponsor. You, my Patreon members, they made all of this possible. If you'd like to join a healthy community and have access to everything from released to unreleased music, private game servers, audio samples and assets, and a monthly songwriting challenge, then you should join my Patreon too, for as little as $1. Thanks for watching. Keep creating. Bye.